Welcome to Perspectives. I'm Joan Herman. On June 28th, a gunman opened fire at a community newspaper, the Capital Gazette, outside of Annapolis, Maryland, killing five employees. The gunman reportedly was upset over the newspaper's coverage of a criminal case against him. Although violent acts of this magnitude against journalists are uncommon in this country, verbal abuse and occasional threats are not so unusual. So why do journalists choose to work in a shrinking profession that typically pays relatively little for long hours? And why should the rest of us care when news is available instantaneously around the clock with just a few keystrokes? On today's show, my three guests will speak about the role of community newspapers in American society and why each of them chose journalism as a career. Katie Frankowitz, who has worked in newspapers since she was 16, is a reporter at the Daily Historian, covering the Astoria city government. Eric Bengel worked as a reporter at the Cannon Beach Gazette and the Daily Historian before becoming editor of the newspaper's Coast Weekend Entertainment Guide. And veteran journalist Jim Van Nostrand, who has some 30-plus years of experience in the news business, has been editor of the Daily Historian since last August. This program was pre-recorded. Welcome to the studio, Katie, Eric, and Jim.
Hello.
Thank you.
Thanks.
I'd like to start by asking what your reactions were when you heard about the shooting at the small paper outside of Annapolis, Maryland. Eric, why don't you start?
Well, I think I automatically assumed what most people assume, which is that this was the merging of two national trends, the vilification of the media and mass shootings. Acknowledging that this was a tragedy, obviously, I wanted to wait a few days before I, got too worked up over it to see if this was a response to anything Trump, for example, had said. And sure enough, it sounds like this guy had a grudge against this particular paper. He decided that he had been mistreated because they had accurately reported on the fact that he was harassing a former high school classmate. Katie and I were talking about this about a week and a half ago over beers. It's not this incident that I think bothers us. It's the fact that if it happened again and again, this would be seen as, an established way of taking out your grievances with the media. There's a script to follow. And one of the crazy things is that we live in a time where any one of these deranged loners has a support group online that will cheer them on and say, yeah, go get them.
Yeah, thank you. Katie, what were your reactions?
I don't know that I had any particularly different reactions than I would have to, I don't want this to sound callous, but, it was a shooting, and I think maybe I paused a second because it was a newsroom and I'm inherently interested in things involving, other newsrooms, journalists, reporters. And those stories are always really sad and horrifying to read. But I don't think that I read those initial reports and correlated it directly to me or felt particularly affected because I too am in that profession. I was talking with Eric and some of our other colleagues about it later. Of course, there is more reflection on it and what it might mean. To me, it felt fairly random, not in that he hadn't thought about it, but that was the target and that was the method of being upset about something, I didn't go to work the next day afraid in any way, even though we live in a well-armed county.
For sure. Jim?
Well, unfortunately, violence against journalists is standard practice around the world. Dozens of journalists lose their lives every year just practicing their profession. Thankfully, that's not very common in this country, although it isn't unprecedented. Look at the Louisville shootings back in the day. It has happened, although it's rare. I'm also with Katie on this in that a mass shooting and loss of life is tragic no matter who it happens to, whether it's high school students or journalists. I don't focus on this, you know, as journalists being any more of a protected class of citizen than any other. I mean, all life is precious.
Definitely. Does the Daily A get threats, or do you as reporters or the editor have to deal with much verbal abuse? When I was a reporter at the Daily A back in the late 80s, early 90s, we did get verbal abuse a fair share. I mean, it just kind of comes with the territory. I'm curious what it's like today.
Yes. Never. I don't want to say I don't take it seriously, but I worked in the service industry for a long time and was probably mistreated by random strangers far more often in that kind of job. But you also know in that job that it's kind of meaningless unless someone's physically threatening you. It's just words. And so when I deal with any kind of abuse as a reporter, I think most of it is classed in that people are upset because you're reporting on something that is true and they would rather it not be known. I would say that's where the bulk of any abuse I encounter comes from. I have never, well, no, that's not true. I have been physically threatened a couple times, but not here.
In your role as a reporter, though?
Yes.
Eric, what about you?
Well, as Coast Weekend editor, that's a pretty cushy, safe space. Mostly people get upset that, you know, we get a time wrong or an address wrong. But when I was a Daily A reporter, there was only one situation I encountered where something really could have gotten out of hand if I'd pushed a little harder, and this was a face-to-face encounter. It would have been very easy to see how that situation could have escalated based on who this person is and his background, but that's about all I want to comment on that.
Sure,
incident.
Sure. Jim, do you have any experience with that?
Well, if you work long enough in this business, you are going to experience threats, whether they're physical or verbal or online. I've lost a colleague to enemy fire in Afghanistan. I've had another colleague wounded in Iraq. Another colleague, Austin Tice, is still missing in Syria after several years.
Jeez.
The intelligence we have indicates that he's alive, but he's being held.
Wow, I'm sorry.
On the domestic front, though, the most serious threat I've ever had is verbal. I've had my tires slashed for refusing to omit somebody's name from a police blotter. I've had colleagues threatened physically. You know, I'm a big guy, and over the years, it's been my job at times to walk out into the lobby and calm down somebody who is being physically aggressive to shorter colleagues. You know, coming out and looming over them often settled things down. In one case, the person was wearing a gun. They didn't brandish it, but you know that you have to take that into account. Over the years, I've had to talk a lot of people down who were very angry about one thing or another. I mean, if you're doing your job right in this business, taking people to account, you know, truth to power, you know, holding a flashlight or a spotlight on things that should be spotlighted, there are going to be a number of people who are angry with you for one reason or another.
That's true. So why do you do it? Why did you all get into journalism, especially Eric and Katie, both of you? Because you got in knowing that the profession is not a growth profession, just the opposite. Why do you do it? Katie, I'll start with you.
In some ways, I don't know. I know that I enjoy it immensely. I know that it's also immensely frustrating as a job at times, but I got into it because I liked writing and I wanted to find a way to write usefully in the world. I always assumed I would enjoy writing fiction because I liked reading fiction. I've always been a reader. But there's something about being a reporter and having this writing that I think can be beautifully crafted. Even if it's a really run-of-the-mill story, it can still be written well. And to try to have you know, to have that goal to still write well, but convey information and convey useful information or tell stories that are surprising or interesting, that is really addictive. And I just enjoy it is kind of the bottom line. And I've always worked on small papers, and I think that is another layer of feeling like what you're doing has the power to do good in your community. And that is also a reason why I do it.
And you are doing all of that on deadline, and working to be as accurate as possible, which is no easy challenge. Eric, what about you?
I'm really relieved to hear everything Katie just said, because I often feel really uncomfortable with the mantle of reporter or journalist, just because I feel like I got into it for different reasons than many of my colleagues did. I wanted the experience of working with an editor. I wanted to have, you know, the dignity of a byline. I wanted to know what it was like to engage with the world in a way in which, you know, my writing skills could be deployed for the public good. But I mean, like Katie, you know, I was a reader. I enjoy a well-crafted story. There is an art to writing journalism. Even if it can be dry to the reader, it's certainly not dry to us if we handle the story correctly. And I feel like I came to it later than a lot of journalists. I started in my early to mid-20s, really not sure what else I would do. And maybe that's the ultimate reason. I don't think I can do anything else.
That's how I got into it, actually.
Yeah, that's exactly right. Ill-suited for other jobs.
Yes. What about you, Jim? Got into it, actually, when it was a growth profession,
I imagine. It's been described as a calling, as opposed to just a job. You know, if it was just a job where you punch in a clock every day and doing the same thing. I love the intellectual challenge of covering multiple topics that mean things to the community, whether it's, you know, one moment you're talking and thinking about the death penalty, the next part day, you know, hour, it's about a bond measure, you know, an event coming up, an issue that's of interest to people. I just enjoy that. The original reason I got into it is because I wanted to make a living writing. I've always been a better writer than anything else. The joke is that we get into journalism because we can't do math, so we become writers. Also, I delivered a newspaper when I was a kid. It was my first job. So I was opening a newspaper and reading it, you know, at an early age, and it sort of got me hooked. I'm also a student of history, and my hero growing up was William Shirer, who was a correspondent in Europe, you know, when Adolf Hitler was coming to power in the 1930s. He told the world what was coming, and the world didn't listen. So he was sort of a personal hero. I wouldn't say he's the reason I got into the business, but he's one of them. And finally, I enjoy being able to employ this job to do good. It's a really good feeling when you write about something that makes a difference in somebody's life. When you write about somebody who needs an artificial leg, and the community comes together and raises money and buys that person an artificial leg. When you cast a spotlight on something that people didn't know about, and they care passionately about it. Little things like that really make this job worth doing, and it separates it from just about any other job out there.
Why are community newspapers such as... Oh, I'm sorry, Eric, go ahead.
I'm going to springboard off of that. What was I going to say?
I was going to say, if you're a shy, unadventurous person who does not like taking risks, it's a great way to have adventures.
And it forces you to be outgoing, which it did for me when I was very shy.
It has brought me out of my shell, and I'm better able to have phone conversations with people. I would just avoid the phone. Would not talk to anybody, and now I have no problem with it. But that's what I was going to say. Readers aside, there's nothing more personally gratifying for me than going into a story not knowing very much about it, and then at the end of it being able to write about it with some authority and to have done the story justice and do it in a well-crafted, hopefully entertaining way.
Great. If you're just joining me, you are listening to a pre-recorded interview with three employees of the Daily Historian. Katie Frankowitz covers the Astoria city government, Eric Bengel is editor of the newspaper's entertainment guide, Coast Weekend, and Jim Van Nostrand is the newspaper's editor. They are speaking about the role of community newspapers, why they chose journalism as a career, and their reactions to the murder of 5 employees at a community paper outside of Annapolis, Maryland, on June 28th. I'm Joan Herman on Perspectives on Coast Community Radio, 91.9 Astoria and 89.5 Tillamook. I did want to get your remarks about why community newspapers, such as the Daily Historian, the Seaside Signal, the Chinook Observer, and the Cannon Beach Gazette, all of which are owned by the Daily Historian, are so important to communities nowadays, especially when we can go on the internet and get news instantaneously. Who'd like to start, Jim?
Well, you can get news instantaneously on the internet, but is it the news that you really need? Community newspapers like the Astorian fill a niche in that they cover the things that local people care about. Katie here, for example, covers Astoria City Council. She covers them very well, writes just about everything you would need to know, and where else would you get that information? You know, Coast Weekend, which Eric runs, it's the definitive source for what's going on in the community. What are you going to do this weekend? What's coming up that I might be interested in? You know, that's a role a community newspaper's poised to fulfill better than anyone else. Yes, you can get national news. Yes, you can get the latest celebrity updates on the internet, but I think we're poised to cover Astoria and the North Coast better than anyone else.
I would add to that, too, that I don't think people realize how much of the news that they see as national or far-reaching is generated by small news organizations, whether those are newspapers, TV stations, radio stations. For instance, the AP Wire picks up our stories all the time, and when I've gotten feedback sometimes on those, there are people who don't realize that those originated with us. And so I think if you saw community news organizations go away, you would also not be able to get a lot of that news as instantaneously on the internet. And in terms, sort of echoing what Jim said, in terms of getting certain types of information, we're it. And I don't just say us. I mean, there's CAST, there's KMUN, there's these other organizations. But for local news, the big stations, the big papers are only coming here when something's really awry and they're gone not long after. We're here day to day, week to week, year to year.
Eric, what are your thoughts on that question?
Well, I think just on a practical level, we're giving our readers the information they need to navigate their communities and to live in them in an informed way. And to the extent that you think anything local is important, local elections, bond measures, local services like the warming center, a local library. I mean, community newspapers are incredibly important. And my girlfriend made the point last night that when you read about national news, like even though it's hugely important, it can still feel very remote. It's like you're reading Game of Thrones. But when you read every day about people that you know, people that you run into, places that you visit, you know, your neighborhood, you feel like you're part of an unfolding story. And that's incredibly gratifying and it's empowering.
What would happen? Oh, go ahead, Jim.
Just one last thought on that. One valuable purpose we serve is to knock down doors, to get information that public officials and others would not be willing to provide if we weren't there. A small example, in another state, I covered a borough council meeting. And there's 50 people in there, and the councilors opened bids for something. They said, oh, we're going to go in this other room and talk about the bids. And they went through this door and closed it, and everybody sat around thinking, looking like this is a perfectly normal thing. So what did I do? I got up and I walked through that door. And they said, you can't be in here. And I quoted them the Pennsylvania Open Records Law verbatim. And they looked at their lawyer, and he sheepishly nodded and said, okay, yeah, I guess he can be in here. So that's an important function we serve, is to break down the barriers to information.
That is indeed an important function, to say the least. Many people aren't aware of what goes into getting a story. How do you go about filling the newspaper, for example, with the local news that you do?
We attend meetings and sit through long hearings and talk to people constantly. We hopefully are engaged in our community in some way, whether that's walking around it often or attending events or going and eating in local places. Whatever it looks like to be here, I don't think you have to live here to accurately cover a community, but knowing what the community does, I think, is just as important as listening and hearing what they say they do. As the city reporter, I spend so much of my time literally just walking around and catching people in their offices, catching people on the street, looking at sites where things are happening and going by them regularly, and on the phone constantly.
Yeah, I would imagine. Eric, when you were... Oh, go ahead, Jim.
Well, to back up what Katie says, one thing when I came here that I expressed to the entire news staff was that I expect reporters to cover their beats, and reporters like Katie do it very well. What people don't understand is I very rarely assign a story to a reporter. Some of that happens. Please write a story about this or about that. But most of the stories you see in the paper are developed from reporters like Katie and Eric talking to the community, keeping an ear open. You know, they're telling me what's going on in the community, and then we write about them. It's very much driven up and not down.
Eric?
Well, I obviously echo what the two of them said. It's been a while since I've been in that function, but I remember when I was at the Kanemich Gazette, I would always have just a list of topics to ask people about. Something would enter my field of awareness, and I would just write it down. And it might be something that got short shrift at a city meeting. Like, I remember, I think it was in my first year as the Gazette reporter, the Haystack Rock Awareness Program coordinator gave a little presentation on sea star wasting disease. And she said, you know, we haven't really been hit with it yet, but it could very well be coming. And I just kind of filed it away. And then maybe 5 or 6 months later, you know, I had a gap to fill in my docket of stories, and I called her about it, and like 90% of the sea stars had in the intervening months died. And that turned into like a huge story that was picked up by OPB, and I just kept it in front of me. And it just happened to coincide with the right time to report about it.
And just to piggyback on that, it's a two-way conversation with the community. Our readers usually aren't shy about telling us what they think or what they think we should be writing about. And we do listen to them. You know, much of our news comes from our readers, and they serve as an additional, you know, lots of eyes and ears out in the community.
The Daily Historian is a locally owned paper, unlike a lot of big newspaper conglomerates such as Gannett. And it owns the smaller sister papers, such as the Cannon Beach Gazette. How is it that a small community such as Astoria and its surrounding communities can maintain a five-day-a-week paper or even the weeklies that exist in Chinook and Seaside and Cannon Beach when so many newspapers are going out of business?
Well, I can jump into that. My last few jobs have been in the corporate world, the corporate newspapers, big chains, answerable to shareholders. In some cases, those big chains have lots of debt, you know, in which they're literally sucking the blood out of their local newspapers to either pay off their debt or to maximize their profits. You've seen stories lately about big companies, holding companies that don't care anything about newspapers, but they own them, and they're just sucking them dry and laying people off left and right. We work for a newspaper chain here, the EO Media Group, which doesn't do that. They don't have a significant debt. They invest locally. They don't, you know, they believe in investing in the community. And that just makes a big difference.
Well, go ahead, Katie.
I think part of it is that we are the source of local news. You aren't going to get some of those stories through any other medium. And so there is an impetus to subscribe or to, you know, keep us around to some sense.
Definitely. What would you like your listeners, the listeners out here in Radioland, to know about yourselves as journalists?
I would say that we care. Journalists, you know, for the longest time, have this reputation of sitting in ivory towers and being disconnected from their communities and, you know, being sort of this elite group of highly educated, you know, folks who aren't really, you know, the working common man. In a community like this that isn't farthest from the truth, we do care. We passionately care about our communities, and we live here within the community. We're part of it.
Katie or Eric?
I don't really know how to answer that, because being a reporter is being an observer, and I've gotten more comfortable with people knowing me in certain ways than I would have before. But I see my role as not making the job about me. So I guess I don't know. I don't feel like it's enough to say that I care. Like, I am a human being. Of course I care about things. But I mean, I'm really, I see this work. I'm definitely not doing it for the money. I would find another job. But, you know, I feel like this is a service I can provide, and that might be really, like, Pollyanna idealistic, but, like, that's how I view it, is I'm not very good at remembering people's birthdays. I'm really terrible at sending out cards or care packages, but I can go and sit in a 3-hour meeting and then write a story about it later.
And that's no small amount of skill. Eric, you get the last word.
Well, rather than talk about myself, I feel like since I have this platform, there's something I would like to say and just remind people of. To draw it back to what we were talking about earlier with the vilification of the media, I just want to highlight the really unfortunate asymmetric dynamic that takes place between reporters and politicians, especially right now, where, you know, if a reporter gets something wrong, he or she has to correct that, you know, either just issue a correction or a clarification or write a retraction. Ethical guidelines demand that. But for somebody who is already conditioned to hate the media, that can be held up as a reason to not trust that reporter's credibility or that newspaper's credibility. So even though we're following all the rules of, like, fact-checking and verification and, you know, peer review and all of that,
We're trying to be accurate, and we're trying to be fair, and we're trying to get the story right. And we'll have errors from time to time, and it's not because we want them. And because we admit to our errors doesn't make us untrustworthy. I feel like if somebody calls me up and says, hey, good story, but you kind of missed the boat on this point, I'm going to listen to that. I'm going to take it seriously. And if I can correct it right then and there, I will. If I can do better in the future, I will.
We're going to have to leave it there. We are out of time, but I want to thank my guests, Katie Frankowitz, Eric Bengel, and Jim Van Nostrand, for coming into the studio to speak about their work in our local community newspaper, The Daily Historian. Thanks, Katie, Eric, and Jim.
Thank you.
Katie Frankowitz covers the Astoria city government. Eric Bengel is editor of the newspaper's entertainment guide, Coast Weekend, and Jim Van Nostrand is the newspaper's editor. This is Perspectives, and I'm your host, Joan Herman. The show is brought to you in part by a grant from the Clatsop County Cultural Coalition. Perspectives was engineered today by Brian Bovenizer. The show can be heard on the stations of Coast Community Radio, 91.9 Astoria, 89.5 Tillamook. You also can find show podcasts on the station's website. If you would like to email me, send me an email to perspectives@coastradio.org. Make note, Perspectives will be moving to a new day and time. Tune in to the next show on Tuesday, July 24th at 9 a.m. Thanks for listening.